Since a number of you have mentioned the language of new media, I guess I wanted to assure you that you got your money worth when you bought the book, because I'm happy to unveil the better version of a visual supplement site, which I put together with a great instinct of mine, and it provides sort of hundreds and hundreds of illustrations. So, you know, not everything is working yet, but, you know, basically try to illustrate, you know, every single kind of visual thing, every single cultural object I'm kind of mentioning in the book, and, you know, it's linked to my site. You know, if you're still not satisfied when you refund your Amazon purchase price, but, you know, I hope it should be okay, right? Anyway, so it's just off my site. Well, I'm going to actually stick to the original title of my abstract, which usually never happens, so I'm amazed myself. And the title is, if I remember correctly, From Cultural Interfaces to Infoesthetics, or From Myth to OS X. And I'll be drawing on sort of my work in you know, three books. One of them is real and two are virtual. The books are Engineering the Vision, which is a virtual book because it's my PhD dissertation from 1993, which I never bothered, you know, to revise. So you can actually find it online, and I actually even made the cover for it. So some people said, can you please send me a book? I said, well, you know, it doesn't exist. But you can get the cover. We'll get there eventually. So the second book is, you know, of course, The Language of Media. And then the third one is one I'm hoping to finish this year, which is called Infoesthetics. So Infoesthetics is actually going to be the subject of my talk. So, and I'm going to draw on, you know, the work I did in Engineering Vision, where I try to trace the rise of computer imaging and human-computer interface from 1940s to 1980s in the context of a shift from industrial to information society. And, you know, in the context of a larger project of Engineering Vision in the 20th century, kind of from Bauhaus to MIT Media Lab. So this is what, you know, kind of prehistory, right, of computer media. So then, in the language of new media, right, I try to look at new media as it is today in relation to modern visual in media culture over the last few centuries, and the focus was on kind of continuity between older media and visual culture and new media. And finally, what I'll try to do this year is Infoesthetics, where I try to talk about, I try to kind of go from new media proper to larger cultural context and talk about the aesthetics of informationalism, right, which term I take from Manuel Castells, Aesthetics of Information Society, and try to understand it specifically in relation to the kind of aesthetics of modernism. And the focus on the differences, the focus on what is actually unique or what is specific about kind of media. So I'm going to start by talking about the concept of cultural interface, which I introduced in kind of the language of new media, and then go on to talk about user aesthetics. Okay, well, as we all know, and this, you know, this has been sort of said repeatedly a number of times here, the human-computer interface have emerged, in the middle of the century in the context of computer use as a real-time control mechanism, as a network communicator, and as a calculator. So the computer has never been originally, you know, designed to access culture. However, as in the 1990s, right, as the role of computer have shifted from being a tool to being a medium, and as we learned from Alan Kay talk, you know, according to him, he already understood way back in 1966 that the computer was a metamedium and the computer can be used as a kind of device to both access and produce culture, but it took about 25 to 30 years for this insight, let's say, to get realized. This concept of kind of human-computer interface, you know, becomes inadequate, right? Because more and more what we do is, you know, we don't really use computer to calculate anything explicitly. We don't really use it to control anything in real time. We don't even use it to move, you know, to communicate things. We basically use it to access culture, right? To produce cultural objects, games, multimedia encyclopedias, virtual museums, electronic books, and to access these kind of objects. So, so let me just show you. This is a computer sketchpad, right? So that's what Enclave was referring to. So this is a kind of, I guess, the origins of graphical user interface, which is 1952. It's also a very interesting field because you can see how the GUI really came from a kind of interface as a control panel, right? Because you can see as the operator is working in his first card system, he actually has to manually press different switches to switch on different functions of a computer because the GUI didn't exist yet. Anyway, this is just a kind of footnote. So in the book I introduced this term, which I never felt very comfortable with because I knew something was wrong, and I think now I understand what was wrong, but maybe it was good for like 1998, the idea of kind of cultural interface. That is, I try to understand the emerging interfaces, the emerging conventions of cultural applications of the 1990s, computer games, websites, computer DVDs, CD-ROMs, DVDs didn't exist yet, etc., etc. And what I realized is that instead of connecting human and the computer, we have a kind of computer interface which connects human to various cultural objects, right? And I decided to introduce this term kind of cultural interface to talk about the emerging interfaces of various cultural applications such as computer games, multimedia encyclopedias, virtual meeting walkthroughs, e-books, interactive narratives, but also talk about culture, what I would call culture access software, right? Things like web browsers, media players, etc. Okay, let me just kind of go through in a few examples of these cultural interfaces of the 1990s. So this is Dungeon Keeper, right? So one of the computer games, we can see how the interface here is kind of styled, right? To immediately bring you into a particular kind of world of a game, right? So it's still GUI because you can kind of click on objects, but with the kind of particular styling which is going on. This is another cultural interface, a website, a web directory, and of course, again, it uses certain elements of graphical user interface, but also uses certain elements of print and certain principles of graphic design, which were never part of original vision of GUI. Here's another example of sort of cultural interface, which I guess for me was really became very important. It's game Myst, which was done in 1993. So using kind of Myst as prototypical example, in the book I have speculated that three main cultural forces, three main vectors, which contributed to a particular shape of cultural interfaces of the 1990s were conventions of GUI, conventions of print, and the kind of cinematic conventions. So for example, in this case, we can also bring architecture, so we have a kind of imaginary architecture, but of course navigable space has never been a type of media until 1990s. We do have idea of hyperlinks, right, which was already developed in 1950s, but now the hyperlinks are applied to a different type of cultural object, which is an image. So as a result, you can click on the image, and then you're going to get a different picture. And of course, when you start playing the game, I don't have these images here, but the game repeatedly invokes the kind of cinematic code, the book code, and at some point, you also get your GUI, so you can go and set your resolution, your audio level, and so on and so forth. So my idea was basically very simple, that as the computer began to be used more and more as a kind of interface to various cultural objects and cultural applications in the 1990s, we have a kind of mix, or to use this term, which I think was one of the kind of gems of this conference, interlanguage, right? A kind of interlanguage which would combine all the original principles of GUI plus various techniques from all the cultural forms, such as cinema and print. Okay, so far for cultural interfaces. So now, since I finished the book a couple of years ago, as I said, I was kind of thinking about it more, and I decided that, first of all, let me expand the term cultural interface. So as opposed to only referring to kind of computer cultural interfaces of, let's say, zeros and 1990s, why don't we refer sort of all culture, right? All kind of, you know, all human culture as having a kind of interface level, right? So we can say that, you know, a book was a particular interface to, you know, text. Cinema is a particular interface to audio or to narrative, which takes place in space. I mean, just as different theatrical traditions can be thought of as interfaces to a kind of narrative which takes place in space and time, and so on and so forth. So if you kind of accept this, you know, larger definition, right, larger extension of a notion of interface, then, you know, when the result is very kind of, I would say, short, a very economical way to understand what is new media, and by extension, what is the aesthetics of IT society. So I would define new media and more generally the aesthetics of IT society as a mix between two sets of conventions, right, or two sets of interfaces. First of all the conventions, right, for data representation, access and manipulation, what you typically mean by culture, and secondly, new conventions for data representation, access and manipulation, what we can summarize by the term information access. And I do realize that the term old and newer are, of course, you know, kind of problematic, because the centrality of information access, of course, I mean, information access is not exactly a new phenomenon, right? So obviously, by extending the term interface, you know, historically, I assume that it has always been a dimension of culture. But somehow, in the information society, it really came to a focus. Right? So to summarize this, to make this, you know, even more compact, we can say that new media and the aesthetics of IT society is a mix between cultural interfaces and information interfaces. Now, the good thing about this kind of definition is that it explains everything, right? So you can actually understand everything about new media and everything about the problems of new media. In fact, as a kind of struggle, right? As a struggle, as a kind of negotiation, as an interplay, as an uneasy walk between these two, what I see is this very two different set of forces, these two very different sets of conventions. Okay, just a few images to kind of keep your attention. So this is, of course, one example of aesthetics of IT society, what I'm calling for aesthetics, through a term matrix, right? So we can see how a computer code becomes a kind of figure, becomes a kind of rain, and yet you can also read it as a computer code, right? So you can see a kind of new type of image, a new type of representation, which is struggling both to be a figure, both to be a form in traditional cultural sense, and yet maintain its primary function as a kind of barrier of information. Okay, and again, so this would be example of what I would call cultural interface, right, in extended sense, right, a particular way to represent some narrative, you know, spatial temporal information, etc., etc. And then, of course, would be example of what I call information interface. This is a particular artist browser. In fact, this is the first artist browser called IOD, called WebStalker, which was created by IOD, which is a group in London, and it was done in 1997. Right, so this is the information interface, right, and this is the cultural interface, and I think what's happening today with our culture in general, and media is simply, you know, a particular area where the struggles reveal themselves more dramatically, is that our culture is trying to figure out how to mix this with this. Okay? Now, if you kind of buy into this kind of theory, then, as I said, you know, I mean, I think it sort of explains just about everything about new media. In particular, we can think of IT aesthetics and new media as situated in between a number of oppositions, right? So what I have is a number of oppositions, and I'm sure more can be invented, and what you have on the left, again, comes from cultural interfaces. So it comes from what we normally understand by culture, symbols, images, performances, narratives, you know, particular media forms, you know, books, cinema, theater. And then what we have on the right is particular characteristics of information interfaces. And because I kind of don't want to, you know, develop a whole interface here, because there's no time for it, and I want to kind of get back to the question of interface per se. I mean, I'm just going to go around for these oppositions, but I'm not going to unpack them, but, you know, I'll be happy to kind of you know, do it sort of at drinks. So localizations are, for example, between form and information, right? Think about between immersion and interactivity, between linearity and random access, right? Because of course, look, if I'm using an interface to access information, of course I want interactivity, right? Of course I want random access. You know, if I'm doing culture, you know, if it's about narrative, it's about symbols, well, it's completely not obvious why do I want to have random access, you know? So it's really something which comes from a world of information access, and which we now try to bring into a world of culture, and that's why it's so difficult. We also have a position between depth and flatness. So here specifically, again, I'm thinking about, again, world evolution, right, world of simulation, I mean, Western painting, theater, cinema, versus information interfaces, which are kind of usually flat. Another position is something I kind of already, I think, got perhaps right in the language of media, is between narrative and database, right? Another position is between what I would say, and it's not a very good term for it, but I would call it non-differentiation versus modularity, right? Again, the idea that, you know, if I'm creating a fictional world, I want this world somehow to be complete, I want it to be a kind of good gestalt, I want it to be a good symbol. If I'm dealing with information, I want this information to be modular, I want to be able to access individual items of information. Finally, another feature which distinguishes traditional culture or cultural interfaces from information culture or information interfaces is that the very concept of interface didn't exist before, because the interface was kind of hardwired into a medium, which means that the mediums had fixed interfaces, right? It was one book, one cinema, one building, and of course the whole idea of interface means that you can have number of different interfaces to the same information. And in fact, this is one of the most profound things about GUI, which we often don't notice, but you can have different views on the same data. And finally, it's a position between kind of culture and work. Okay, so this is, again, very general, and what I want to do now is, since I want to just focus in the second part of my talk on the interface, where I think interfaces are going, I want to talk in more detail about two of these positions. One is between form and information, and the second is between culture and work. Okay? So, five? Oh my God, okay. Okay, well, what about setup time? Do I get a... You're counting, okay. Okay, fine. Well, okay, let's do it quickly. So, as I said, you know, I mean, I think this can be used as a way to think about new media versus old media, information culture versus old culture in general, but specifically what I'm trying to work on in the last 2 years is kind of aesthetics of modernism versus aesthetics of informationalism. And I see this kind of shift from form, because I think the obsession of form, you know, gestalt, I mean, think about abstraction, think about Hans Arp, you know, was really a key of modernism versus our obsession with information representation. I think it was a kind of one, perhaps, way to summarize the differences between, you know, 1920 and 2002. So, for example, we can say that the modernism can struggle between figuration and abstraction, right, pop culture and high culture, cinema and painting, socialist realism and abstract expressionism, right, so it's become a new struggle between figuration and data. Right, which is how can we take data, which is often much beyond the scale of kind of human consciousness, and how can we turn it into some kind of anthropomorphic figures which we can represent. So an example here, which I guess I don't have time to go into, would be various alternative interfaces to rhizome database created by Alex Galloway, work by John Simon, work by Lisa Jevrat, T5, and of course wonderful application which Warren has showed earlier today. And let me just kind of throw you a few images on the screen. Again, right, so this is the kind of modernism, right, figuration versus abstraction, okay? And this is informationalism. So this is one of those kind of beautiful modernist graphics which scientists produce when they try to visualize the web, right? So as you can see, it's the same struggle, right? It's the same struggle. In fact, the visual vocabulary of the struggle is the same, but the struggle has moved, right, from thinking about figuration versus abstraction versus to kind of data versus figuration, right? So here the data becomes, you know, gives access to some very kind of beautiful, of course, in a very particular sense of beauty image. Okay, this is work by John Simon, and again, they are very interesting because he's one of the few media artists who specifically refers to the history of modern art. So he makes his works where he uses artificial life and cello automata. So all these things, you know, all these things are actually moving. You can see it here, but you can see that he definitely kind of makes references to Mondrian. In fact, exactly the same paintings I showed. But again, imagine that all these things are mobile, so you actually have mobile data processes that generate these ever-changing abstractions. Okay, finally, just there's one thing I want to do here, which is this. So now let's talk about this particular kind of opposition between work and art. And I want to talk about this idea work into art, or work and interfaces and cultural interfaces. So the question becomes, what kind of culture and what kind of aesthetics is needed for information society? So, well, one way to approach it, you know, since I'm doing a systematic comparison between our period and modernism, is to apply what I would call Bauhaus filter. In fact, it does exist, I'll show you in a second. Or modern strategy, right? So let me show you Bauhaus filter first, right? This is program Art Illustrator. This is a grand winner of one of the festivals in the media, and this was the first winner for software art. So we can make some image, okay, and then we can select everything, and then we can apply a Bauhaus filter, right? Okay, here we go. Well, sometimes it works better than ours. Okay, so how can we do the same thing to sort of, to our aesthetics? Okay, very simple. I mean, think about how did the moderns derive, right? What is the algorithm to figure out the new modern aesthetics? It's basically three things. They said, first, new aesthetics of industrial society already existed in the realm of industrial work, right? Factories, cars, bridges, ideology, engineering. So this is a photograph from a magazine which was in a show at LACMA a couple of years ago. The show was about work by Le Corbusier and wasn't fun. And, you know, these people so much admired modern engineering because they thought this is the new modern aesthetic, so we would actually put selective pictures of industrial products in their magazine, right? So here we have pictures of Ford cars, here we have pictures of Fiat, and of course this is from modern MoMA exhibition of 1936. So first we identified that the new modern aesthetics already existed in the realm of work, in the realm of industrial labor. The second move was to transfer this aesthetics to everyday life, right? Which is what done at places like Bauhaus and Putimas. Bauhaus, right, famous Vasily chair, okay. And then third, we use art as advertisement for this aesthetics, right? So you get all these photographs of industrial objects saying this is beautiful, this is how we should live our lives. Okay, let's keep this one. Now, the question is, can we apply this modern year strategy, can we apply Bauhaus filter to our own cultural period? To derive into aesthetics? Yes, we can. So if you basically mechanically follow the strategy, you would say that avant-garde is the software is essentially avant-garde of our culture because it is in the software designed for work, software not designed for culture, where you already find the new aesthetics at work. Right? So we can say that new aesthetics in information society already exist in the realm of information work, i.e. software interfaces or information interfaces. And then the goal of new media art is to systematically transfer the strategies of information interfaces to cultural interfaces. In other words, I would say that the avant-garde of our time is the software designed for work. Visualization, databases, multiple views of data, Windows, email, and so on. So what we have to figure out is how to use this kind of software, you know, in its kind of true sense, to communicate culture. Well, it sounds good. I need about 90 more seconds. Yeah. Well, of course, you know, things don't work so neatly, right? So what is the problem? What is the problem with applying Bauhaus filter to our own time? The problem is that this very kind of clean dichotomy between work and leisure, between functional and aesthetic, which was very clear in the 19th century, and which became a foundation for modernism, right? The famous ornament is a crime idea. Today, with dichotomy, doesn't work because, as we know, work became, right, something you do 24/7, and work became highly aestheticized. Here's your iMac, right? Are you doing work or are you having fun? Well, it's not clear, and that's the whole idea of iMac, right? So today it becomes so hard to separate work and leisure, functional and non-functional, from engineering, which was the ideology of modernism, the goal to experience design. So this is some, you know, examples of it. This is some product design done by students at the Art Center. Again, how you're taking this basically what 20 years ago used to be purely functional tools of work, and you make it fun, you make it, you know, you make it narrative, you make it experiential. Okay. Again, think about the world of work. You know, this is you know, first part of the 20th century. Right. So this is still the realm of work. Right. You know, one set of interfaces, right? When you go to a culture, you go to a cinema, you get a very different set of interfaces, right? There's very clear separation between kind of work and leisure, between work interfaces and culture interfaces in the modernism. But of course, what you have now, it seems like completely mixed up. This is from a wonderful show called Work Spheres, which some of you perhaps have seen at MoMA a year and a half ago. So this is like the interface of the future. That's what kind of interface you're supposed to use for work 5-10 years from now. I mean, it doesn't look very functional, right? It looks very, very pleasurable. So you can use the interface to like download pornography, to go to an app store, or to do spreadsheets, right? It's good enough for all of us. Okay, let's keep this one. This is from the same show. This was the best thing in the show. This is by a designer from Netherlands. It's a kind of like wearable computing, but literally wearable computing, right? Computing becomes soft. So this is a computer bed, right? You know, so you can basically lie in bed and you surf, et cetera, et cetera. So these things become completely mixed up. And let me just show you kind of a few more images, kind of as an inspiration, right? So here fashion means industrial. And you can see how this kind of dichotomy, right, between functional and the aesthetic, between industrial and informational, is still to work in our culture. This is high fashion, right, which pretends to be very, very functional, right? High fashion pretends to be military. High fashion pretends 1984. And if I can have 40 more seconds, I would like Benjamin to demonstrate to you, you know, I think the perfect example of which is Mac OS X. When the operating system itself really becomes a work of art, and it can be used to do work, but it's also very beautiful and aesthetic in itself.